You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24 with me, Daniel Bache, host of The Entrepreneurs. Art Tucker is the founder of Tinwood Estate, an English sparkling wine producer in southern England, just below the South Downs in West Sussex. The brand was launched back in 2007, making delicious sparkling wines from traditional champagne varietals, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier. Art's parents had immigrated from the Netherlands in the early 1980s, having grown iceberg lettuce on the farm until Art took over at the age of 21. He decided to try his hand at winemaking after learning the land had an ideal location and soil for growing grapes. Today, Tinwood Estate is among a number of notable wineries in England, making wines that are increasingly showing up on wine lists across the country and around the world. Art and his family also run a hospitality business on the site, which is keeping everyone very busy. Here now is my conversation with Art on the story of Tinwood Estate.
I was born here on the farm, but mum and dad before me weren't growing vines. I wasn't looking out on fields of vines when I was young. All fields of iceberg lettuce. So mum and dad were salad farmers. And I can positively, definitely say that growing vines is more fun than growing lettuce. I actually started off with Dad. We're a Dutch family. We emigrated from Holland. Well, I did, Mum and Dad did. Dad was the youngest brother of three brothers. So the glass house and the farm. So the same thing in England, it always goes to the eldest brother. Dad was actually a consultant for Marks and Spencers, and he was traveling around the world teaching farmers in Kenya, in South Africa. And he was looking at ideas in California where he saw this new product, which was iceberg lettuce. And then he came back to the UK, started planting lettuce, was one of the first iceberg lettuce farmers in Europe. I mean, it's crazy now because you see it in every single shop, supermarket around Europe, but back then it was a really new thing. And so that's how the farm started.
Fascinating. I imagine growing up on a farm was a great childhood for you, but talk to us a little bit about the transition then into winemaking. Was that something you were interested in? And growing grapes that are classically used for champagne is quite a bit different than iceberg lettuce.
Absolutely. So no, I've always thought when I was young that I would grow up to be an iceberg lettuce farmer and follow in the footsteps and take over the business. But come about 2003, 2004, being a medium-sized family farm, growing fresh produce for a supermarket was becoming an increasingly bad relationship, let's say. And the prices were getting lower and lower and lower every year, but our costs were going up and up and up. And we're getting into an unsustainable relationship where also supermarkets were treating us like dirt, basically. So Dad said, this is not what I want. This is not making me happy anymore. And he sort of kicked it in. And he gave me the farm when I was 21, and it was as a blank canvas. Said, do whatever you want. Don't do lettuce. And I met a winemaker in Kent. That's where I was at university. And he said to me, if you've got this flinty, stony, well-drained, frost-free land, then actually you've probably got a good place to grow vines. But if you've got chalk, you're an absolute winner. And I came back to the family farm, and I was looking at this stony, flinty, frost-free farm that we have. We're on chalk as well, and I was thinking, this is unbelievable. We're actually, without us even knowing it, for the last 35 years, we've been sitting here on this land that's actually perfect for growing vines.
Talk to us about the grapes you do grow and what the terroir there is like.
So we're growing Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. So the kind of three classic champagne varieties. Our vines were planted in 2007. So we are in our 14th season now. And although that doesn't sound very old compared to many other grape growing regions around the world, actually 14 years in England is one of the older vineyards now. So we're growing these three varieties on our flinty, chalky soils. And actually, this flinty, chalky soil is especially good for Chardonnay. And it really comes through on the Blanc de Blanc. It for us is 100% Chardonnay. You see that minerality, that freshness coming through. And if your listeners have kind of had the odd glass of Chablis before, you get that Chablis-esque kind of silkiness with that acidity bite behind it. But you get that super clean finish. And that's what we really get on our Blanc de Blanc. It's fantastic. So our terroir here is stony, flinty, chalk soils. We're 2-3 miles away from the sea, so we don't get affected by frost too much. And we've got very, very good sunlight here. We're in just about 2-3 miles north of Bognor Regis and east of Chichester. And Bognor Regis is always fighting out to be one of the sunniest towns in mainland Britain. It's the reason why we can produce some absolutely world-class grapes here.
I've sampled the Blanc de Blanc, and it is, as you say, very nice and refreshing, especially in the summertime. I want to just walk back a little bit to sort of fill the gaps between the times of 14 years ago and having some fantastic product out there now. What was your knowledge of wine like? And obviously, learning to produce wine is a massive undertaking, a huge process. So just talk to us a little bit about your learnings there and who you brought in to help.
Well, absolutely. I mean, when we started in 2007, there wasn't contractors. There wasn't anyone really to go and ask. So we started off on our own, trying to work it out ourselves, how to grow vines. So we're farmers, we're growers. So we've got a good kind of basis of understanding, and we know our land. This is one thing that we didn't know, have to go around and start testing all the fields. We knew it just from decades of experience. We knew what were the warmest parts of the farm, what were the best draining, how the land reacts to different types of weather conditions. So that's ingrained in us. But I did need to learn specifically how to grow vines. And for this, I went and moved to New Zealand for a year. I lived in Marlborough, Blenheim to be precise. Lots of fantastic New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, but also Chardonnay, also Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Riesling, Gewürztraminer. And I went and worked with this fantastic family, Mike and Claire Allen from Huia. Now, Mike was one of the founding winemakers of Cloudy Bay, so he knew his stuff. And, you know, it was brilliant. We're looking after vines, pruning at the beginning of the season, and then obviously bud rubbing and tucking in and crown thinning and crown clearing. To picking during the weeks, and on weekends be a mixture of fishing and bungee jumping and skydiving, and then through to the after harvest, making the wine, hand plunging Pinot Noir tanks and barrel sampling. It was one of the best moments of my life. I loved it in New Zealand. I almost didn't come home, to be quite honest. It's a great way of life out there. But that also what they had there, which, you know, we were looking from a farming point of view. But when you go out to New Zealand, one thing they do out there so well is cellar door. The whole experience of marrying wine with food, going around on bicycle from vineyard to vineyard. There's a few other regions that do this as well. So Stellenbosch is obviously very, very good for this too. And Sonoma in California and Hunter Valley in Australia. So that's the first time I've really experienced that. And it was enlightening. I thought actually we could bring that back here to West Sussex too, which we have done now. And we have a big cellar door and we do overnight accommodation and food. So the growing side I was learning, but also it opened up to my eyes to the tourism element behind wine production.
Talk to us a little bit, Art, about the market for English sparkling wine. Obviously, as we said off the top, it's not one that everyone around the world will know, but gaining in popularity, and there are some big players, some heavy hitters here. There are some fantastic wines, including your own. But talk to me just about the reach and how that has been going for you.
So it started off with two pioneering sort of producers, if you like, and that was Nye Timber and Ridgeview. For a long time, there are two only sparkling wine producers here in the country, both in Sussex, where our vineyard is located as well. And then really in sort of the Nye Timber won the IWSC Best Sparkling Wine in the World Award. And then the year after, Ridgeview won in the Decanter Wine Awards the Best Sparkling Wine in the World. So they both won these huge awards. And everyone went, wow, they can produce sparkling wine in Sussex. Where's that suddenly come from? And almost in a way, a bit like New Zealand was 35 years ago. In the 1980s, no one had heard of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. But by 1995, let's say, Cloudy Bay was the word that everyone was talking about. So we're a very, very young industry, but since these awards, there's been actually a real stand up and listen from a lot of masters of wine around the world, a lot of wine critics. Well, even you're speaking to me now on the radio. There's not a week that goes by that there is a story of English sparkling wine in national newspaper, international press. Everyone's taking a great keen interest. And certainly in this country, in England, there's, you know, not a Michelin star restaurant now that doesn't have English sparkling wine on their list, which you would never have believed that 20 years ago. So it's going from strength to strength, winning lots of awards. We won, for instance, just 2 weeks ago, silver medal in the IWSC with that Blanc de Blanc that you tried. It was 2 points off of gold, which we're hoping for next time. And the quality is increasing year upon year with the whole industry, including us. Our wines are just getting better and better. And there's one thing, of course, that does make a difference that the whole world is going through, but climate change, we are becoming year upon year warmer and warmer. With us being such a northerly grape growing region, climate change is actually sort of very poor for humanity and as a whole, but pretty good for English winemaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the other pressure that you haven't mentioned yet might be Brexit and just growing the reach of the company. But politics aside, I wonder just how you envision the company moving forward. Is that in new wines? Is it in growing the international footprint? Or is it, as you say, in continuing to gain recognition here in England and an all ships rise with the tide sort of thing, where if there are a number of great producers getting recognition, it's sort of good for everyone and will breed more great producers?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a case that the quality from all producers is going up, but also there's going to be a lot more quantity. There's going to be a lot more global reach of the industry. I do would say that we need to be careful that we don't grow too quickly, that we don't suddenly get English wines in a very fortunate position with undersupply. If you like, there's more demand than there is stock at the moment, which is good, especially for us producers. We like that sort of position. But if we get into a position where all these vineyards come onto stream, we have three or four massive vintages in a row, where's all the wine going to go? And to make these international markets, that takes quite a bit of time, actually. So we're in partnership with Ridgeview, and they're focusing quite heavily on the United States. But it's not that you just go over there, meet a guy, and then suddenly you're sending pallets and container ships of wine. It's a slow burn. Those relationships take time to blossom. You need to build your customer base. It doesn't just happen at a flick of a switch overnight. That does take time to nurture.
Just like the growing of vines, of course, and great grapes. You know, I would be remiss to not ask you about the family aspect. You mentioned your wife earlier. Obviously, you've been on this land for your entire life. Talk to me about the importance of family and what that's been like in growing this company and running a business at the same time.
Yeah, so Dad is still involved. My wife is running the tourism side. I've actually got my niece now here, my sister's daughter. She's now starting to do tours. I have a 1.5-year-old son, and I dream, he doesn't have to, but my dream is that he would take over from me and he would be the third generation here on the land. We're lucky that we don't have any shareholders. We are family-based. We don't have to do an annual shareholders meeting and discuss financial positions. That's not what we do. We're custodians of the land. This is where we're born. This is where we look after. This is where we live. And this is what we want to pass over to the next generation. And that happens a lot in France as well, of course. But it means that all of our decisions are much more long-term based, not looking for a short-term fix, if you like. It's got to be something that works in the long term. And also it does mean that financially things do take a bit longer. We haven't got such like an angel investor who will suddenly come in and put £2 million into our account to suddenly build a massive new winery or suddenly plant 100 acres. So the vineyard area is, we planted another 20 acres of vines last year and we'll plant another 20 acres of vines next year. But it needs to grow organically. We can't spend huge sums of money every single year. It's a gradual process. It's a little bit every year, every 2 years, a bit of an investment, if that makes sense.
Art Tucker, founder of Tinwood Estate. You can learn more about their wines at tinwoodestate.com. That's all for this week's show. It was mixed and edited by Jack Jewers. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.